Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please stay with me. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years, and anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. That company is GEICO. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers, and in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm out of time.
Now, Podcast One brings you Spike's Car Radio. A downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast, Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Spike's Car Radio. How are you? Hope you're having a good time. Hope you're in your shop. Hope you're driving safely and not like Zuckerman. And we're here to make your life a little bit easier. People like to listen to this show, Zuckerman. Do you like the fans? Do you interact with the fans a lot?
I do. Yeah. I'm surprised that they're... that there's even someone who knows my name or knows me, but I'm always surprised and happy.
I'm always surprised and happy. People do impressions of you. You've made quite an impression on the American car public and listeners of
all,
the show.
All five people?
All six. There's
all six
now. Yeah, we added another guy. So what's going on, Zuckerman? We have a lot to talk about today. My throat. Listen to my throat. Listen to it.
Well, you seem like a low energy Ferriston. What's the matter?
I'm trying to wake up. There you go. Look, it just came back.
Okay.
It's Monday morning. It's 9 a.m. I've been eating very healthily for like 6 days, six and a half, and I get to last night and I decide to go bonkers. All right. What does that mean for me?
Means you should have a good cry. You should be in a fetal position on the kitchen floor, naked and weeping.
Well, I get to this point, you know, I don't care what you have to say, Zuckerman. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. And if those of you who stay in shape know this. If you get on a good run, you get to the point where people go, you better stop, especially if you're old guys like us, right? They go, you're starting to look a little too thin. Starting to look a little sick, right? And I got there maybe Thursday and decided to take it a few more days. And then Sunday night, last night, I went bonkers.
What do you consider to be bonkers?
All right,
well, you had a scoop of ice cream?
I ate an M&M? I ate at least a pint of ice cream. No, scoop? Are you kidding? I had two steaks. I ate half a baguette, a really long one that was as tall as I am. Mashed potatoes. I went the full distance. I had one of those Bill's chocolate chip cookies, a pint of some crazy combination of ice cream.
You are going to have a very satisfying follow-up to that meal, I predict.
I've had it twice.
Wow.
But I'm a little tired because of this binge
that I had. You're wrung out from the after effects.
I am. And here's what I don't understand. Why are we in this cycle? Like, why do I never learn that this is not going to be – it wasn't fun. It was horrible. I was like laying on the floor.
Food is one of the senses that we like to stimulate. It's as good if for some people it's as good as drugs, gambling, drinking, you name it. It satisfies.
Well, anyway, that's why I'm a little tired. Today we have a very funny guest with us, Wayne Fetterman. He's on the show primarily because his last name is like mine. I want to talk about
Fetterman and Zuckerman and Ferriston.
Right. That's it. Secondarily, he's got a history of stand-up podcasts that I'm really into and want to talk to him about. Before we get there, though, let's talk about cars, Zuckerman. Somebody reached out to me, don't remember who on Instagram, wanted us to talk about how do we feel about 996s. I think we've covered a little bit of that before. What are your feelings on the 996 this morning before we continue on?
I have always considered the 996 a do-not-buy zone, an ugly stepchild.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ever see my black GT3?
I like that. I did like that, but I never have been a fan of the 996. There was something about the shoddy interior, the funny headlights, the tea kettle sound. It never appealed to me.
Mm-hmm. Even when I was driving it around down – this is back when we, I think, lived on Doheny.
That's
next
correct.
To each other. And I was up and down the street in that
I
thing.
Believe
what about that wing? I like that wing now.
Okay. That was the only valid 996 I had ever seen. That 996 I could get behind. A GT3 was a real man's car along with a GT2.
Right.
Those were two valid ones, but I never have felt a true need to – dip my toe into that water. I do believe that a 996 RS is also – a cool car.
Yeah. But they didn't bring those.
They didn't bring them, but it's going to be 25 years before you know it. Oh, man.
That's true. And I know a few folks have brought them over anyways. They don't seem to care. And they were the ones. That was that first GT3 were the GT3 RS, right? Where they just thought, we're not going to bring it here, and we went bonkers.
Right.
But now, folks listening, think about the engine problems with these cars. The intermediate shaft bearing, right?
Oh, I've got that problem too.
Do you?
Yes, in my nether regions, in my plenum and tapper.
Your shaft?
My intermediate shaft bearing.
But what do you, I mean, you and I don't really care about such things. I don't even know if there's a way to prevent this.
There is an update. There is a fix. I think it was the first series. It was the 996.1 that suffered from those particularly badly. Mm-hmm. But by the time it was in the 2000s and later versions did not have that. I think
I went through two engines on my GT3.
Did you?
Yeah.
Awesome. You did?
They were covered under warranty. Yeah. But they kept finding metal shards in the oil.
Kind of like that. It was like that 991 GT3, the 2014.
Yeah.
That would catch on fire.
Mm-hmm.
These things happen.
And didn't they repurpose those engines?
Where did
those engines end up? Who just told me they ended up in some new cars?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes. Are they ours?
I never heard that. They tore them down and they I would have figured
those
had
engines got reinstalled somewhere.
I love that. And someone else is going to catch fire.
Well, you have some 996 news.
Well,
now
I
that
do.
We're discussing it.
I do. And
this is good news. And we're going to share this news with you, the audience. And all we ask is you don't tell Jerry Seinfeld about it. All right?
And if you have five, and since we have six listeners, it's not going to be a problem.
I think there are more than six.
Okay, six and a
half.
There
are certainly people. I mean, if we're John, my business partner was down in San Diego and someone ran up to him to congratulate him on producing this podcast, which he does not produce. He had no idea who this guy was.
I hope he took credit.
Yeah, so it's weird what's happening with this, but he did not, no.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I tell you what happened.
Okay, now remember, this is a secret, everybody listening. This is a secret that's just us. It's me, you, Zuckerman. It's Will. It's maybe Wayne who's listening out there. And also, don't tell Jerry. Wherever you see him on the road, do not tell him this story. Because we want to surprise him.
It's going to be a surprise. So we're going to see if our listenership will follow instructions. So when I went a few weeks ago, I was in Houston. And I dropped in on Ray Joseph, who we call Ray J.
Ray J at RPM Motorsports.
He is a character. He
knows the original websites that I used to. He's got a site separated between the cars for sale and my private collection.
Which may be for sale for all sorts
also
of
also for sale.
What I really like about Ray, he is the direct descendant of clever cattle salesman. He just if you say, Ray, there's no prices on his side. If you ask him, what's the price of that car? He goes, well, let me think and let me get back to you. And he plays it out really long and really drawn out. And it's a strategy that's worked for him.
He's in Texas?
Houston. And you'll notice that
one of the street racing capitals of the United States.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And you'll also notice that his
illegal street racing,
his site has not been updated in about 20 years.
Right.
Now,
I'm at RPM Motorsports, but that's not it. That's the wrong one.
It's RPM Sports Cars.
RPM Sports Cars, right.
Or RPM Porsche.
I gave up on this guy because his prices were astronomical.
Well,
but will he negotiate with you?
He will negotiate with you, it's torture to negotiate with him. It's by nickels and dimes, and he tells you, I have $20,000 in that car. No, Ray, you're paying some guy $8 an hour, and if you were charging retail for his work and someone was paying it, maybe they would pay $20,000.
Right.
But
what did you buy?
The 996 GT2. In
Adriatic blue. Now this is Jerry Seinfeld's former car. I know this car very well. This is the GT2 that I drove around Willow, and it scared the hell out of me.
What year?
What year was I there?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I don't know.
It must have been 2002.
Yeah, it would have to be shortly after that, maybe the following year.
2003.
Right, right.
So we're talking, you haven't seen this car in 15 years?
No. This is what, at the time, made me say I will never own a GT2. Because I was driving in Willow, and I went across through the straightaway, through little turns. I was coming around the backside, and there's a little bit of twist there. And I got on it at 80, and the rear end came out. And I corrected, but then I brought the car in. I just said, this is a car that's going to kill me, and I don't have the skill to drive it yet, right? Today, sitting before you, I have the skill to handle that car. But I remember thinking, this is a scary 911. That at 80 miles an hour, I can be spinning those back wheels by just getting on it, right?
Right.
It's an incredible car. Have you driven this car?
Never.
Okay. And I remember Jerry ordering Adriatic Blue. I mean, it's the only Adriatic Blue one, if I'm not mistaken,
one of
right?
One.
One of one. Paint to sample. I believe he sold that car to Sam Cabiglio.
That's true.
Sam wanted it immediately. And this might have been right around the time. No, I don't remember. It was probably offered to me, and I just laughed. There's no way. And then where did it go after Sam?
That I don't know, and Ray would know better. We could even try calling him up. But
okay,
would,
so this is great. So it ends up there.
It ends up there, and I happen to pop in to see Ray. I'd been in Houston on business. I was not expecting to see Ray. And
did you know the car was there?
I did not even. I did not know the car was there, and I walked into his...
Oh, I'm looking at it right
yeah,
now.
And so I had a couple extra hours. I called Ray. Ray was going to be going to the movies to see that Adolf Eichmann movie, and I said, why bother going there? Just hang out with me. And so...
Is there an Eichmann movie?
Yeah, there is. There
oh, my
is.
God.
It's horrible.
Right?
So
it's not called Predator? That's not that movie?
It's a different movie.
Okay.
And so... he said he would meet me at the shop. We drove to the shop, his place over there in a weird part of Houston.
Yep.
Across from a mega church. And he let us in, and we were looking around. And in the corner, underneath the lift, the far corner, underneath the lift, in the dark, I said, what the hell is that, Ray? And he said, funny, you should ask. And his twang. Funny you should ask. I can't do it. Can you do a Texas accent?
No, but let me give you some stats on this car. Adriatic Blue Black, 14,100 miles. Now listen to this. The only Adriatic Blue one, but also one of only three paint-to-sample 996 GT2s.
That's right.
So there were only three paint-to-sample, period. One in Adriatic Blue, special factory build for a noted celebrity VIP Porsche collector. Well, everybody knows who that is at that point, right? Isn't Jerry the only guy who gets that? With custom exclusive options, including graphics, black mirrors, and special interior features, sports seats, paint to match, carbon interior. Jerry pioneered a lot of these.
Paint to match sports seats.
Didn't he?
You see the picture
of that? Liner and AB pillars in leather. That's a weird choice, Jerry. Aluminum instrument dials. I like that. Porsche crest on the headrest, recent service, window sticker, show quality, finest available. This car is so beautiful. And your plan now, you've bought it?
I bought it.
And you're going to do what to Jerry with it? Because he
likes to do this to us.
He does. He has, time to time, I've seen this car around on the internet, and he has expressed remorse about not having it.
And my plan is that... He'll be, say, at the Malibu Kitchen with you, and I will pull up.
He's going to be here this weekend.
I won't have it in time, I don't think. And I will pull up with this car.
In his car.
And say, hey, how do you like my car?
That's going to be awesome.
Yes.
That's going to be a great moment. And you see, now we've shared this fun with you, and we'll have to find a way to record this. I'll record it on my phone. And then we'll play it with the audience. But you please don't tell Jerry what our little plan is here. You'll hear this before this moment will happen for sure. And I promise you, I will record his reaction and play it on the show. But Zuckerman, you are to be applauded. This is a fantastic plan. Very expensive plan, I'm guessing.
A very expensive plan just to get a rise out of
just to get a rise.
Seinfeld.
Do you think that you will be able to use this as a bargaining chip to loosen a car from Jerry's collection?
We could only hope.
And if you did, what car would that be? I think I know what that car would be. But maybe not. Maybe you're not interested anymore. Is it the Targa?
Yes.
That I found him years ago, the 71.
Tell us about that car.
It has 0.0 miles. It's a new 1971 911 Targa, right?
Do you remember the story behind it?
I believe it was supposed to be used as a police car, but it sustained some damage and never went into rotation, right? So
it had...
I think 600 or 700 original miles on it,
That's right.
It
was a Dutch. The Dutch always wanted an open top car. Remember, the Dutch were very funny about this. They liked cabriolets, 356 cabriolets. You remember that the 356 production stopped in early 65, and the Dutch police actually went to Porsche in 66. And got Porsche to make them 10 more 356 cabriolets in 1966, over a year after production had ended.
Right.
Then they liked the Targa. When the Targa came into service, they started using those as police cars. And so in 71, they had ordered this car, and somehow it sustained front fender damage. It went back to the factory, and it stayed in the factory until 2000. 12, was it? 13?
I saw it in the back of a magazine.
Right.
I believe it was Excellence. Yeah. Back when you could just find these things just sitting there and nobody would move on them.
Right.
Because it was in another country or it had a dent in it.
Right. And so what year was that?
Gosh, I don't know. It was a long time ago.
Was it a long time ago?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it wasn't more than 10 years?
There was no internet listing, I'll tell you that. And it was – and I know it had to be Excellence Magazine. And it was like this tiny little ad in the back. And, you know, but think about that. No one is moving on that car. It's got no miles on it, and it's a month after month. It's just sitting in the back of a magazine. And finally, I'm like to Jerry, "I'm like, why don't you import this thing?" He's like, "All right," and buys it. And it's the greatest. I've driven that car several times. It is an incredible experience to drive that car because it is what I imagine it would be like to drive a car new in 1971.
It delivers. It does, and it has delivers that magic juju to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something about the car that just has a special aura. You know what I'm talking about? It's weird.
It's new. It's a new car, and it's something you can't feel in a restoration. It's something you can't feel in a preservation car with a lot of miles on it. It's new. It's factory new.
I think it
has,
1,400 miles on it now?
I don't know.
And it's got a creamy white. It's got the black top. It's got the stainless hoop. It just looks so good. And it's got an excellent plan. It's got a 2.2 liter engine. It's a T, but it has those Zenith carburetors that just work so good. There's no shortage of power.
There's no shortage
of handling and reactiveness.
Now, what if you like this car, this Adriatic blue car?
Well, then maybe Jerry will have to pony up more. Everything has a price, so we'll have to see. And you know him, he does sometimes operate on a whim. He may have to have it, and he may just say, "That's terrific."
You are sitting pretty, Zuckerman.
You think so?
Sitting pretty on this one.
It is a really good-looking car, and I've never thought that a 996 was a good-looking car. But in that color, in that spec,
you're going to love it. Have you driven a 996 GT2 lately?
No.
They're great. They're so fun.
Do you realize
97 GT2s? They're a blast. They're light. They're mechanical. You know, it's really fun to be shifting gears on them. They're really hopefully the prices will come down because they can't compare performance-wise to the new stuff, but they are fun weekend drivers.
Put it this way. This is 10% of what a 993 GT2 would cost.
Right.
I have seen 964s that are more expensive than this.
There's all sorts of things
that are way more expensive than this car.
Right.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, it's very exciting. Before we go, we're going to bring Wayne Fetterman out in a minute. I just want to thank all the folks at Hodinkee. We had a nice time with them here in town, didn't we?
That was really nice.
Hodinkee.com, the Watch Fellas, what we are to Porsches, Ben Clymer and his crew are to Watches, and they had this week-long event. They really know how to promote themselves. They had a UTA art space. They had the leaf green 911T in there, which I sold to Ennery, who is the COO of the company, that we sold to him on display in front of that. Art was fantastic, wasn't it?
What is that building? You know what that building
That's
is.
That's an art space for UTA, United Talent Agency. So
it is such a fantastic
creative
space
of some kind. Right.
And it's
so they had watches. They had the car there. They had this watch here. I'm wearing this prototype Octavia Orange Boy that they're making. Now, you've heard me talk about watches from time to time. You've heard me talk about the Siffert Octavia that Caliber 11 did with Tag Heuer, right? Hodinkee has one coming out right now. And they are not going to make many of them. This watch is so beautiful in person. I've been wearing it wherever I go. People are complimenting me on this watch, Zuckerman. They're Tag Heuers. They're not like Rolexes. They're not expensive. Go to Hodinkee.com, and I'm telling you, buy one of these. You will not be sorry, because they're not going to make a lot of them.
I love the Hodinkee
story. There isn't a big opportunity to buy limited edition watches out there, and this one happens to be a killer. But I don't want to give the prototype back. I'm going to be honest with you, right?
Keep it. You should tell Ben Klein.
I believe there are two. Right. And so how do I handle that, Zuckerman? You're good at difficult conversations.
It's not a difficult, Ben. I've kind of bonded with this watch. How do you feel about me keeping the prototype? Would that be okay? If it's not, I understand. What's so hard about that? I don't want to be a pig, but I'd like this. I really like this one on my wrist.
But I am a pig.
It's all right to be a pig.
It's all right to be a pig.
They made a Broadway play called Kinky Boots, right, which is a failing boot company.
Where is this going? Yeah.
I'm
going
to tell you something.
Okay.
Because
hurry up,
Hodinkee, Hodinkee's kind of like this. Climbers out of Wall Street. What am I going to do? I'm going to sell straps, watch straps. And he's made his life out of straps. Who would think
straps and great content?
I understand. And great watch.
Right. And now they're selling new watches. They have deals with all of the watch companies. And
but it's really straps.
What an operation they got.
I tell you what, Ferriston, we're going into straps. Straps are the future.
They are. And he's got quite a car collection.
That's
going,
right.
Too.
Straps of the future.
All right. We'll be right back with Spike's Car Radio and Wayne Fetterman.
Let's talk about AMSOIL. You know why I like AMSOIL? Because they're a bunch of car people. They're gearheads. They're into all kinds of power sports, and basically they get it. Recently, AMSOIL created a guide to increasing horsepower in your vehicle. It has insider tips from some of the best in the business on coaxing more power out of your engine. You can get your copy free at AMSOIL.com/spike. AMSOIL.com/spike. While there, find out more about AMSOIL Synthetic Motor Oil 2, like how AMSOIL Signature Series Synthetic Motor Oil delivers 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by a leading industry standard. Go to AMSOIL.com/spike to get your free insider's guide to increasing horsepower.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
Welcome back to Spike's Car Radio. We're here with Wayne Fetterman.
Who else?
Look at the phone calls just keep rolling in for me this morning. Now, Wayne, let's just call you a comedian, right?
Yes.
But you're so many different things.
I'm many things.
You're many things, including your USC comedy professor
that's
now.
That's new. That's relatively new. But
wow, I want to hear
Professor Fetterman.
Yes, Professor Fetterman.
What is it like having that last name, by the way? Because you're very close to mine. Is it difficult?
I love it.
Is it? Do you have trouble with spellings?
Once in a while, people double D it. That's about it. How about you? You have the weird IE and all of that stuff, right?
It's a mess.
Yeah, it's constantly
a mess.
Debacle. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
I don't know you that well. We go back a little bit.
Right.
I was actually on the pilot of your talk show.
You were?
On the run-through or something. Do you remember that at all?
What were you doing in that?
I don't know. You were interviewing
Erica, my wife, reminded me Jason Bateman was in that too, and I said he was?
Okay, so you have no memory. You have no memory.
I don't remember. No, but tell me what you were in.
It
I want to know.
Matter.
No, it does. I'm curious.
I don't know. You had that talk show, and there was.
I remember the talk show.
And when we were doing,
we
more.
Did six. See, the reason I probably don't remember is because we did six pilots, and then we did one pilot in the very, very beginning.
Yeah, I
and
don't know which. I'll tell you which one. I know
you're tight with Joe Fury. Right?
I know this. Yeah, yeah. I know the set was on the
Best Damn Sports set.
Yes.
Right.
So one. Anyway, this is
so that's six pilots.
Okay.
No, I want to break this down now. I've got to know what you did on this
OCD.
Show.
You interviewed me. You were working on your interviewing skills.
Oh, you were one of the guests.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, my poor memory is shot.
How
did you slot into that group? Because that's Jason Bateman. Jerry Seinfeld.
I don't know.
Wayne Fetterman.
People know me.
Did you do stand-up?
Yeah, I've been doing stand-up since the early 80s.
Oh, my God. Now I got to track down this show.
Yeah.
Was it a good experience? It must have been horrifying. I didn't know how to interview at that point.
You still are bad at it.
Oh, I love this guy.
It was a little better. now than I am then. Well, thank you for doing that.
You're very
you
welcome.
You know, the show went on for 3 years.
Very successful. Of course, it's very successful.
Thank you. I owe you that.
Well,
now I'm here to return the favor.
You're welcome.
And do a real
interview. I can talk about cars. I can talk about...
We don't want to talk about cars today.
Okay.
We just did. We just did 15 minutes on cars.
We could talk about Jews.
We can do all of that. We can about. So anyway, this is a relatively new thing, this USC, being a USC professor.
Right.
It's just... It's a class. It's advanced stand-up. They already have a beginning stand-up. Do you remember Craig Anton, the comedian?
I know who he is. Yeah.
I saw the glaze in your eyes when I brought up his name.
Because I have a different question altogether about USC.
Yeah.
Do you approach them or do they go, hey, we want to do a comedy major?
Well, first of all, there's no comedy major. There are comedy majors now in the first time in the,
okay.
this country. Because I'm now doing also a podcast about the history of stand-up.
Right.
And but that they don't have a comedy major. This is at the School of Dramatic Arts. And there's nothing more dramatic than stand-up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, Craig Anton, who is a comedian and actor, started the started teaching stand-up because we're in this comedy boom that's been going on, fueled by the internet.
Right.
So I was a guest lecturer in the class, you know, talked about my stuff, talked to the kids, inspired them with my story coming from Plantation,
Florida. How many kids in the audience? Is that one of those big halls?
I like the way you... No,
like 250,
I wish.
300?
I know, like the paper chases.
Yeah, yeah.
No. No, it's like a little... It's you know, I'd say 20 kids.
Oh, my gosh.
In like a little like room.
What's the name of the class?
Well, my class is Stand Up 2, the one I teach.
Right.
So they are... In order to get to Professor Fetterman... You've got to get through stand-up one. So I teach stand-up and comedy history.
And what happens in stand-up one? I'm fascinated by all of this, by the way. And by the way, I would have taken this class. This is the structure I needed
to
kind of do this.
It's just, you know, it's the first class. They Judith Shelton teaches it, and she's – excuse me. And she just teaches, you know, they go up. It's basically just a performance class.
Right.
So you go up and – You try to find your own voice, and you try to develop maybe 3 to 5 minutes over the course of the
semester.
And
you're standing up and
– Almost every class.
Everybody is getting up.
There's a microphone.
Oh, my God.
Your thing, and then she gives you notes, and you get feedback, and you try to
– And how do you know the history of stand-up? How did you learn this?
Me? Well, because I've been at stand-up since, the early 80s, and before that I was super comedy nerd. Before that term even existed. So,
oh, my gosh. I don't even
want
to get into, I don't want to get into the history yet.
Who does?
That, I think, is a separate act. This, trying to teach somebody stand-up comedy is fascinating.
Yeah, let's go.
You can't teach talent, can you?
You can't. Exactly
that's
right.
First, okay.
Well, that's the problem.
This is the first class I say. I say nothing I will teach you or say to you will be as important as you getting on stage and doing stand-up.
But it must be... Like Zuckerman, part of the reason Zuckerman's even here is he's a lawyer. He's got his own law firm.
Right.
But I noticed right away he was kind of a stand-up comedian.
Right, he had that rhythm.
He's got a good rhythm.
Yeah,
he's funny. He kind of looks funny. He has an ability to make you laugh. There's an intelligence to what he says.
Uh-huh.
He's got a very distinct point of view, right?
All very
there
important.
Aren't a lot of friends in my life like him. So in your class, I'm saying – I imagine that maybe 90% of the kids, maybe even more, really shouldn't be pursuing comedy.
Well, you make a good point.
And what is, you know.
And let me, at the beginning, it bothered me a little bit because
I
was like, this is my time. You know,
right.
I want to be with people who are passionate as I am. But that's just not going to be the case. Some people are, like engineering students are like, maybe this will help me loosen up in business situations or something like that. So, unfortunately, that's the case. But there's
so
always
it's
a
just
few...
any of that experience of just getting up and talking is just you find educational, even though there may not be a comedy career.
And there is, we do break down, you know, comedians act and like, what is he doing? Is he doing an act out?
Right.
Is he doing a callback?
Right.
Is he doing first person narrative? Is he like we? So by the end, they have an understanding. So when they see a comic, they're like, oh, at least I kind of know what's going on more than he's killing or he's bombing.
Which
is the normal.
Right. And I mean, part of the reason.
Yes.
So let's go back now to, and I know there's that one fan out there. When I wrote for David Letterman.
That's right.
I wrote for David Letterman, you know, for
of
five
course.
Years. 5 years. And
do you still get any residuals from that?
Yeah.
Once in a while, I would assume.
Probably. Yeah. But I wanted to do stand-up back then. And here was my situation. I didn't have a guy like you. I didn't, at the time, I didn't really know any comedians. I was just in this writer's room all the time. And I couldn't quite get in my head, since I'm writing comedy for this guy, that's, you know, it's a pretty big comedy job. I couldn't get it straight in my head that I would then walk out of that office and then onto a stage and would start bombing all over the place. You can clear your throat on this show.
No,
nobody
good,
gives
good.
A shit. Are you just burping? Are you throwing up?
Retching, I was trying to do it.
Where we notice everything here.
All right.
No, it doesn't matter. But you know what I mean? I didn't have anybody like you to go, hey, you got to get up on
but
stage
nobody did
five
that.
Nights a week and bomb. Like, to me, I thought, if I bomb that first night,
yeah,
this is the end. They're going to fire me on Letterman.
Would you
right?
ever talk to your buddy Jerry Seinfeld about his first time
I
on
didn't
stage?
Know Jerry at the time.
Would you ever talk to him about his first time on stage?
I've talked to everybody at this point about it. And now I understand it, that you're supposed to get up there and bomb for about a year to try
even,
and find your
not,
act. But
it's not even about bombing and stuff, because some people do well their first time.
Yeah, but they never quite capture it in the second and third time. Like, I've heard that story before, like that first time they go up, and it was great. And then they try to recapture the magic. but I guess what I was trying to say was, I was so afraid that this would hurt my reputation as a writer that I never...
Right, I see. Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that
course,
I would be walking into the office the next morning. I was completely wrongheaded in thinking of it, and I really wish I had pursued it back then, because it's really a young man's game. The question for you is... All right, I'm coming around to this.
That was a big
statement. I love it.
Excuse
God,
me.
What's wrong There's a lot with of, you?
Yeah.
It's allergies. Phlegm. It's ice cream.
Think
it's
Judaism.
A mess this morning.
Mucus.
I'm a mess this morning. But anyways, the question for you
is,
I like you're right.
Let's hush tone. Go ahead.
You get on stage, because I have done stand-up before.
Yeah.
You get on stage, and there are so many different ways to go. And so many different things to talk about. The one tip I've heard, and you can tell me I'm completely wrong, that I really have thought about myself, is this idea: what are the things you're most angry about, and what are the things you're most upset about, is a good place to start in stand-up. Is that true?
For some people it is. For some people,
Jackie Mason made a career.
Then where do you start? What do you, when you have a class there, where do people start? Because there are people out there listening right now, like Matt Farah, who are going, I want to do stand-up, but I how do I start? What do I do? Am I the type of comedian that writes? Am I a guy with a
well,
pad?
There's a million ways to attack
so,
it.
So, teacher, tell us how to attack
it. Well, I would
it.
Like, first of all, I would like you to write what you think would be 3 minutes of stand-up and perform it. And then we talk about that and like why you're talking about growing up in Tennessee or why you're doing a voice of like Maria Bamford style, where she just kind of does voices in her head and of her parents and things like that. And it's very... almost avant-garde what's happening on stage. So there's really not like, oh, everyone's got to be the guy with a, you know, a problem. Like Jay Leno used to go on Letterman. I don't know if you were
I
writing.
Remember that bit.
Yeah. What
I
was
used to
his
watch.
Beef?
What yeah, what's it? My beef? I'll tell you what my beef is.
Yeah, so.
But it's always good.
Yeah,
I
but
like
that was definitely a point of like something that bugs you. That is,
Right.
It could be something you love. Like, let me give you an example. I love, and I'll tell you right now, love Taco Bell. So I have a Taco Bell routine where I sort of make fun of the restaurant, but it's not like I hate it. It's not like I want –
I know.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. It could be something you're passionate about and love, or passionate about and hate, just as
it's
a starting point.
It's basically you're learning about that person who's ever standing on stage, their worldview through their material.
And then what do you think about comedians that are really opening up these days and really telling us the horrible, gory details?
Well, that's been going on for a long time now.
Right.
I mean, Ferguson always did that, right? Craig Ferguson?
I don't remember.
He would always mime his horrible drinking background.
I'm talking about the bowel movements and
oh yeah, well people are I know it's very explicit now. It's very explicit.
You go to the comic store there what was that place on Sunset that used to
The Laugh Factory?
No, there was literally a comic book store that had a great kind of open mic.
Oh yeah,
during
of
the
course,
week.
Meltdown.
Meltdown,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're
it was
the
incredible.
First three comedians would just be talking about their bowel movements for 10 minutes. And I just, all right. And then Kumail Nanjiani would come on and you'd go, holy shit, well, that guy.
Yeah.
He's a discovery, right?
Yes, he is.
Right.
Yes, he is. But again, can I just circle back for one?
Sure,
I'm allowed
sure.
to circle.
You are.
I also say that I can't, and no one can really teach another person to be funny. Like, that's just an unteachable. It's like
right.
sort of teaching someone how to draw or sing. Like, you mm-hmm. have to be able to do it, and you can get better, and you can refine it, and you can learn some. But you can't. You just can't teach someone to be funny. It's
no.
Just that's.
So have there been any yes. discoveries in this class?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The very first class I taught, there was this kid who, like, immediately got it and could do an impressions.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already, Paul Feig has directed a couple
Come
commercials
on.
With him.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
wow.
yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and there's, you know, there's some people that are more like writers.
Right.
That, like, would write, like, maybe for, like, The Onion. Like, they mm-hmm. were good at that sort of parody or satire. So it's... So for the most part, it's fun. I mean, it's a little frustrating sometimes with people who just aren't passionate or don't care and just like, oh, this will be an easy A because Professor Fetterman.
Is it an easy A?
It is pretty easy A.
You'll give them
I can't,
an A.
I'm not allowed to a grade on talent.
I would imagine.
Can you fail somebody?
Only if they don't show up. Only, that's the only
Do
way.
Do you get a parking spot?
No. That's a good. These
they
are
don't
all,
make
these,
you. They don't
all,
let
that's
you
the
park
great
on
question.
Campus.
He's a USC grad.
No,
right here.
No, they. I have to pay for parking. In
Can
that
you law. Get our kids into USC?
Yes.
Is that a? You want to go? Is USC?
I want my kid to go.
For what? Why? Tell me why USC is a.
It's a top 25 school
it is?
Now. When I went,
yeah,
it was
a big
it was
deal.
For bums
it's a
like
big
me,
deal.
But it was a bum school. But now it's a big deal.
Okay. What do you think changed?
You. And your comedy class.
Yes, the Fetterman, the Fetterman wing.
Professor
the Fetterman building.
I like that you call this an easy A. Like, public speaking is the scariest thing people in the world do.
Again,
and you think going to class every day and talking in front of 20 strangers and trying to tell jokes is easy?
Yeah.
That's
you
hard.
Out, you start out with them getting up and saying their name for 2 minutes in
it's
front
hard.
Of everybody.
Yeah, no
it's
kidding.
It's hard. And, but... I it's the interesting thing is I brought in guest speakers. I brought in Margaret Cho. I brought in Jeff
She's
Ross.
Great. Wow.
Both of them took a comedy class early on.
They did.
Because I've always been very skeptical of comedy classes.
Yeah.
Always thought they were taught by people that weren't particularly funny.
Right.
And it was like,
yes,
go do mics and, you know, get hang out at the clubs and stuff. But
there is a place on Sunset or Santa Monica, that little storefront that's a comedy school.
There is?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's right near the Porsche dealership, right?
Is that
That's
what
why
it is?
You remember it, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh yes, you're right.
I've never seen a person going in and out of that place.
It's a front.
Yeah, I think it's a front for crack sales of
or
some kind.
Massage parlor.
But I've noticed that place.
Yeah. Yes, you're right.
And because you're at a red light there, and I'm always looking at it going, huh, maybe I should go in. This would be fun to learn. I would imagine there's so much that helps – just getting up and talking and writing something and then getting any – it's going to help you
– get feedback.
It's just going to help you whatever you end up doing in life,
so
I find.
Yeah. So
because I find –
You're endorsing this class.
I am totally endorsing it.
Stand
because
up
it, it does work.
Level
I found just doing this podcast has mm-hmm. helped me. You know, we were just – I was just on stage with Jerry in Monterey for this car thing.
Yeah.
And it was completely relaxed. I was like facing an hour of an interview, but I'm like, well, I do this all week long now. And that's what I think that class will do for people because it's a terrifying idea to get up that first time.
First of all, it's terrifying just to speak in front of
right.
it,
do you have a
let alone with the pressure of like I have to elicit laughs at
Do you
it.
Have a microphone for them?
Yes.
They,
yeah, I think okay. we said that earlier, right?
And is it a stand?
So listening is part of this job, just so you know.
Well, I just want to be clear.
Anything that helps
is
anybody.
Is there a mic stand? Do
yes,
they have a stand?
Yes, they do.
So they learn how to relate to that.
I learn about mic technique, about how to take it out, how to adjust this. I know this sounds silly. It
no,
sounds
no, it,
almost like
it doesn't.
Ridiculous.
How, well, what is the way
it's
to
the
take
fundamentals.
It out?
It's the
fundamentals. Just so when they go up to the club, they're
Can I guess? All right. So when yeah. I walk out to the mic stand in your class, right, do I want to grab the stand for a second while people are applauding, and then I want to pull the mic out?
No, it's not that.
Is that how it works?
You get to decide. Do you want to leave the mic in the stand? Do you want to take it out? If you do take it out of the stand, you should maybe move the stand to the side. You don't have to.
I've noticed. All right. We got to take a break, right?
Yes.
Do we have to take a break? We're going to come back. All right. I've got so many questions
I know,
about stand
I love
up.
It.
I've got so many questions. I know we have to get to your podcast stuff. We'll
no.
be right back with Spike's Car Radio. If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse everybody, even you, Zuckerman. All you're looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
And here we are. We're back with Wayne Fetterman. I'm sorry, I've got lots of breaks, lots of sponsors, Zuckerman, and people... I guess that's what keeps us in business, is selling these ads. We're talking about stand-up comedy. Have you noticed what I've noticed, which is...
that question is a stand-up comedy trope?
Yes. That
yes, I have noticed that.
That comedians that stay around a long time, and I'm thinking of Jerry right now, that their act-outs get bigger and bigger.
Oh.
True. Have you noticed that? What are your thoughts on that? Am I right?
I have noticed that he is a little more effusive than he used to be.
Right.
Yeah, no question. But that might just be specific to him.
Sebastian Maniscalco.
But I feel like Sebastian isn't in this, I've been around as long as Jerry Seinfeld.
But his act outs and his hand and his
looks.
But
I feel like he's always been done. I feel like that's always been his.
His ability to get laughs on an eye, you know, it's amazing.
That's all he does is act
outs. That's all he's doing.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So,
but Jerry does more than act outs.
Jerry's act outs are getting bigger and his arms are moving more.
Giant fan movements.
Giant fan movements.
You know, part of it might be that he's playing these big arenas now.
Okay.
As opposed to clubs.
Now, why would that matter?
Because maybe he wants to
project
the people in the back to see him doing the, you know.
I'm funny.
Do you know what?
What's the thing he does with the weather systems and all
right.
that stuff?
Like, But I think it is just another way to grind laughs out of the audience.
Grind.
That they really respond. Like he's using every inch of the act to get laughs.
You know what he doesn't use?
What's that?
Profanity to
right.
get laughs.
And props.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's not using every inch of the act.
By the way, this is not a put down in any way. It
sounds like a little bit.
No, I want to learn how to do that. Like, how important is the act out to the joke?
Depends,
I'm saying this because I'm a writer. Yeah. I'm a guy who writes and thinks all the laugh is in the word. But I'm asking you this question, Professor.
Yes.
How much laugh is in the act out?
Well, again, every comedian doesn't act out. So
I like that Wayne is getting upset.
I don't know.
Should I act out in my act?
in a big way. I'd have to see the act and see what feels comfortable for you.
Should I try it? Should I try the act out?
Yeah, try the act out. Try it big. Try it small. To tell you the truth, unlike your observation, I feel like the more I do comedy, the smaller and more specific I get on stage.
Uh-huh.
So it's very precise.
So you're going in a different direction.
Sometimes I almost whisper.
Someone told me, it might have been Louis, he said, stay in the emotion. After you finish your joke, stay in the emotion of your joke. So if you're very upset about it, keep that angry, upset look until the laugh comes
and
goes.
That's a good – I'm going to write that down.
That's a good one, right?
Yes.
See,
all
right, there's one.
I'm learning something.
There's one. Jay Leno told me, he's like, write joke, tell joke, collect paycheck.
Yes, he's very
– But just tell a joke, doesn't work, move on to the next joke. Just keep moving on to jokes. Joke, joke, joke.
He's the blue-collarist of us all.
Right, right.
He is like, this is a job. This is easier than any other job that my buddies have to do. I'm thrilled to do it, and it's just going to be a job.
Right.
It's incredible.
How does he memorize all that stuff? Like when you go out and you do stand-up now. How much time do you do? Do you do an hour? Do you do 30 minutes?
It depends what's happening. Sometimes I open for people, which I might do just half an hour. And then when I headline, it's between like 50 and an hour.
So what?
I don't do much over an hour.
So what is your process? Are you a writing guy? Are you just someone who can remember these things?
Let me tell you, I always have this on me.
That's
flare
a pen?
Flare pen.
Oh,
I don't know if you're old enough.
And unchewed at that.
Yeah. I don't like the ballpoint pen.
Okay.
And then I always have a piece of paper with some stuff on it that I'm just ideas that I write down. And then before I go on, I like kind of compile it and put it together.
So you're not like writing out joke word for word.
Well,
you're just a bullet point guy.
Yeah. But you know who did write out jokes word for word? George Carlin.
Yeah.
George Carlin was almost like a play with that guy. It was like specifically this word, this word.
Where are those documents?
Oh, at the National Comedy Center in Jamestown.
There's a National Comedy
Center. NCC.
No,
the NCC.
It just opened up.
Because Jamestown is such a funny place.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about it, please. I would like to know more about this place.
Well, it's... I mean, all of what I'm saying is absurd because it's taking comedy so seriously when it's just basically telling jokes.
What goes on at the National Comedy Center? Here it is. You're right. Just had its opening July 30th,
Jamestown,
2018.
Where? Virginia? Ohio?
A little place called New York.
In Jamestown, New York.
Yeah, not far from Cooperstown.
A series of special panels.
Yeah.
Why? Exactly right. Why is this in Jamestown, New York?
I can tell you that. That I can answer.
Okay.
It's because they used to have, that's where Lucille Ball, I believe, was born or grew up. And there used to be a Lucille Ball
festival.
Like, little music. Yes, a festival and a little museum there.
Correct.
And that's, I believe, they piggybacked on that.
Well, they had an event with Amy Schumer and
yes.
Lily Tomlin.
Yeah.
Alan Zweibel, Brent Drescher.
Do you know Alan? He's a fellow
writer. I know
writer.
Who he is. I'm a fan of his, but he was generations before me, I think, on SNL.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, let me tell you what else is there.
Okay.
Jim Gaffigan hologram.
What? Wait, there's a
hologram? You didn't think you were going to hear that today when you woke
no.
up, did you?
This is at the National Comedy Center?
Yeah. There's a Jim Gaffigan hologram where he literally does stand up for you.
With Tupac.
Wow. I don't know how it all works.
All right, well, I'm going to reserve judgment until I get to Jamestown, New York someday to go see this. Boy, that's really weird. That's really weird. I've always had such a weird time accepting people seriously talking about comedy like we're doing
today. I know.
Today.
It's, I don't know. You're
museums
the one that
keeps... of comedy. Yeah. I don't quite
How funny
get
could
it.
The museum be?
Huh? Right. What?
How funny
well,
could the
Well, I think
museum...
of how much I hate car museums.
Right.
But they're up there with things I hate
painful.
In the life, in world.
You feel like Peterson is painful.
I support everything they're doing. I like the folks that are doing it. And
have you been in the basement?
I have been.
That's
in
the best part.
That's
and
that's
for folks
what I like.
Who have not, I just what I'm saying
you
is,
just
I
just said you hated car museums.
I do. I'd rather see cars in motion. So you know, it's a weird thing to say. I'm not a big fan
what
of car shows on lawns or museums.
What about it?
But
the
Peterson,
Bob's
I love
big
what they,
boy. What about the Bob's Big
but
Boy?
But I want to clarify the Peterson because I know a lot of folks out there.
I know. I can see you're backtracking.
I'm backtracking.
He's literally moonwalking right now.
That serves a purpose for people who aren't really car people who go there and they
okay.
see a lot of stuff that they don't normally see.
Like
so I love that. My kids used to go. We used to take them there every couple of weeks when they were very young. It's an amazing place for them. It's just not for me. Because I drive these cars.
I got you.
I guess it's a little different, right? So yeah. That's what I mean. It's just not something I do. I hate's a little too strong of a word, I guess.
Well, you,
right?
I'm just quoting you. I don't know if it's strong or not strong.
Anyway, where
were
we
talking? I was surprised that you said that. That's all.
Well, no. I don't think I'm alone when I say, look, at National Comedy Museum, okay, whatever it is. But, or would I rather go down the street and watch you do stand-up?
Oh, I see.
I think I would rather do that. Would I rather get in a car and drive? Yeah, or see a car go by? I'd rather do that. Museums aren't, I guess, really my thing.
You sure you don't want to see Victor Borge's piano bench?
That I would do.
It's there with the seatbelt. It's there.
I used to write Victor Borge's jokes on
what?
Letterman when I was a writer for David Letterman.
Tell me.
Yes, I do.
I feel like Victor Borge is one of the great forgotten comedians.
I would write jokes about, because then it was ironic. So, you know, you'd write about Victor Borge in a Viewer Mail letter or Nipsey Russell's in a jetpack, which I once did.
I like that.
By the way, that never aired. I don't know what it paid off, but I just remember the way into it was, we don't have that, but ladies and gentlemen, how about Nipsey Russell in a jetpack?
Yeah,
and
that's
then
great.
Nipsey Russell in a fake jetpack would fly over the, and we pre-taped it, and Dave was really upset about it. Because he was a different generation and knew how great Nipsey Russell was. By the way, so did I. I grew up watching him. But he just said, I can't do this to this man.
It feels like you're mocking.
Yeah. So every week I would try to get it in the show until he asked me to stop about 6 months later. But it really was a beautiful image to see Nipsey Russell in a jetpack. Anyway, let's get to your podcast before we run out of time.
Okay.
Tell me what we've got here. We've got a 6-episode limited series podcast called The History of Stand-Up.
I'm going to just check my phone just because I'm not sure of the name of the network it's on and all that stuff. I just want to make sure. It's obviously on Apple Podcasts, the iTunes, I assume, right? Something called CastBox Stitcher, and Spotify.
All right. Okay. And this is Wayne Fetterman. You're going to be our host.
Yeah, I'm with a young comedy nerd who's like maybe 25 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, yeah. And he's sort of like acts as the student. He also produces the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And named Andrew Stephen. And we just talk about the history of comedy. We start in vaudeville. The history of stand-up.
Okay.
Different than the history of comedy. The history of comedy might include Lucille Ball.
Right.
We don't talk about her.
Might even include Greek tragedies.
Exactly.
The masks.
We may go way back. So the stand-up starts in the vaudeville years.
Well, I mean, the word stand-up, we start with the word stand-up actually was coined in the late 40s. And then, so we kind of go from there to today.
Okay.
Like literally what's happening right now.
And do you have guests on this podcast?
We do a little bit, but it's mainly myself and Andrew. Like we've had, Judd has already done an episode.
Judd Apatow.
Yeah, and he's helped us a little bit. And
he's really a historian of stand-up,
yes,
right?
Yes, he is.
He started
like
as a kid, right?
And even on a higher level than I am, because he, you know the story, is like a high school kid. He pretended he worked for a radio station
and
interviewed
around,
Seinfeld and Leno and Shanley and all these guys. And go,
on cassette like, tapes, right?
Yeah. It's amazing. So, he's been at it for so long. It's,
now, he's an example. He's a profile in courage for me because there's
me.
A guy,
yeah,
writer,
it.
Director.
Yes.
You know, people know who he is. And then he decides he's going to go out and be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
He's going to do it.
And I, just so you know, I opened for him on the road. So I'm very close to his process and what he does. And
so what did he do?
He
just faced the fear because everybody's going to applaud for him in that first minute. But then
you
they're going to go.
You get about a minute.
What do you got?
Well, he, if you think about the Apatow empire.
Right.
It's all from a single seed of he loves stand-ups. Wanted to be around stand-ups, interviewed stand-ups,
mm-hmm.
became a young – I don't know. Do you remember when he did it the first time around?
No.
Yeah. He was on the HBO Young Comedian special. He did
rather
well. And then all of a sudden he became the like head writer of or creator of Ben Stiller's show.
Right.
And then he was like, okay, I'm going to be this writer guy now and became a director guy. You know, and then at one point it was like when they were shooting Trainwreck, Amy Schumer – like said, why don't you go up at the cellar? You love this so much, and that was the start of it. And
are you his like a stand-up whisperer?
A little
are
bit.
Are you the guy who he calls up and goes, "What do you think of this?"
Needless to say, he has very finely attuned instincts.
Yeah.
For comedy. But
that doesn't matter a lot, though. That
doesn't
really matter when you're on stage.
I'm more of a sounding board than like just. You just need somebody to bounce stuff off of, and I can go like maybe switch that order or something. But he's the genius behind his genius.
So you do an hour with him on this podcast.
Yeah, but it's not like that. It's not like all of
It's not his process. It's the history.
It's the history, and then we may drop in a few things that he says about. He loved the Marx Brothers when he was a kid, so we talked about them and how that transitioned into stand up and Burl and Bob Hope and. So it's just fascinating. I mean, it's just I've always been a nerd about stand-up, and so this is my pod. Kind of.
Who would you say is the first stand-up guy?
I would say right now, and again,
question.
No one knows, but there was a guy named Frank Fay who was
– Fay. Funny as hell.
Frank Fay.
Right.
Who at the pinnacle in vaudeville was this place called The Palace in New York City. Like you could play The Palace. It would be the equivalent of – being on Letterman or being on the Ed Sullivan Show or now having a Netflix special.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the thing, direct from the Palace. So that was like the hardest booking. And he created – and you used to be comedians. I'm sure you've seen them. They were like in baggy pants and big ties and thing and hitting each other. He was the first one to be like, I'm going to be in a suit and I'm going to be just like a kind of a smart aleck guy introducing the acts. Like they used to have those cards up for vaudeville, or just so he became the MC, and in between the acts, he would kibitz with the crowd, and if it was bad, he would get the crowd back up, and it like and everyone's like, this is a new thing, this is just a guy in a suit.
Wow.
And who saw him was Bob Hope. And Bob Hope's like, oh, I'm a song and dance man, maybe I should try to do just this, and that really became what we know as. A stand-up.
Is there any...
But there's other people that were kind of like messing around with it before Frank Fay.
Can you go on YouTube and find?
No, you can't find.
He kind of looks like Bryan Cranston with an old-timey haircut.
You can't find. There's no. Believe me, there's no like recording of his set. We have a recording of Milton Berle in 1936 at the Winter Garden Theater doing stand-up. So that's only, you know, that's only a dozen years or so after Fay created it. And it's pretty good.
He was married to Barbara Stanwyck.
Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah. He was a horrible guy.
Three marriages. Three marriages.
Yeah, yeah.
One child, Francis Anthony Donner was his real name.
Is the child alive?
I don't know. No, he has a horrible reputation.
As he should, right?
Yeah. He died at 69 in Santa Monica.
Oh, my God.
Look at this. Wow. I've never even heard of this guy.
What does it say? Because you're reading this. Does it agree with Fetterman? Also, there was an African.
He was Catholic.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go. Right. There's that Irish Catholic funny guy. Fay was notorious for his bigotry and alcoholism.
I'm saying.
Right from the taproot itself. The mean Irish drunk. Yeah.
Even when sober, he was dismissive and unpleasant. And he was disliked by most of his contemporaries.
This was written by Barbara Stanwyck.
He later fell into obscurity because of his abrasive personality and fascist political views.
Oh, wonderful.
This doesn't sound like a funny guy.
He should be in
But
the
what does
of
it
fame.
Say at the very beginning? What does it say at the very
that
beginning?
That was his early life.
Oh, okay.
Let's well, it refers to him mostly.
Yeah. But you're right. It doesn't, you know, this is just Wikipedia. But
he has a bad reputation.
Remember, we're gonna write history. Here's some of that stuff. Well, according to actor and comedian Milton Berle, Fay's friends could be counted on missing an arm of the one-armed man. I don't even know what that means. Fay was a drunk and anti-Semite and a wife beater.
You win, guys.
And Barbara Stanwyck had to endure all of that.
Yeah.
There's not
like
much
you?
About
it. All of a sudden, he's your favorite comic.
Yeah, we're now fans of Frank Fay. Now
I like Frank Fay. Fan club.
Now I feel like we should be doing a story on Frank Fay. Let's right. Why don't we call Judd Apatow?
The forgotten history of Frank Fay, the fascist.
Get out of my way,
the
Jew!
Fascist wife beating anti-Semite.
Clear the stage, Jew! I gotta make people laugh.
Is that your Irish voice?
I don't know what he sounds like. Yeah, I know, and he's Irish, and here he is doing that stuff. Well, this is fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. So we do all of that kind of stuff, and there's, you know, and then if we're going to do one season of six, and then hopefully the next season we'll really do like a deep dive, like into maybe the Borscht Belt or, you know, what happened at, you know, the birth of the improv or something like that.
Wow. Very exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Quite a career here. I'm looking here. It says 160 IMDb credits.
That's total. That's self. And that's everything.
And you were head monologue writer for Jimmy Fallon in 2009.
Yeah, we had a very similar thing. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
And was that? That's the late night show.
Yeah,
right?
That's when he launched the late night show. I came in with him as well.
Wow. And so wait. So I know that position very well.
You
I
do.
Used to be a monologue writer for.
Is that what you did?
David Letterman.
You did
Jay
monologue.
Leno, but I wasn't the head guy.
Oh yeah. I was...
So what was your process there? Would you come in the morning? There are a couple, you know, because Jay Leno used to get everybody together the night before for the Tonight Show, and they'd write till 10 o'clock. What was your process for
Mine
Jimmy's
was we'd
monologue?
Get premises out, went out the night before.
Okay.
And
what were those? Were those based on the news or
totally based on the news? We went to like five different sites. There was like the, you know, the obscure news or the quirky news,
right?
Like the dog got in a fight with a snake or, you know, that kind of thing. And then obviously you have to do the political stories,
right?
And then the big show business stories, just whatever's in the big sports, Super Bowl, anything like that. And then you, the writing staff, and we had like maybe six people. Including Anthony Jeselnik,
right.
Morgan Murphy. Like, we had a really, there's, and so,
but
Jeremy
did you write,
Bronson.
Did you write these jokes together as a group?
No. Everyone wrote individually.
Okay.
And then they sent them to me, and then I would cull them down, bring them into Jimmy. He would say, I like these, or this is, or
this
I like
right around 11 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah,
or,
around noon, yes.
Right,
that
okay.
That was our first thing. And then
and how many jokes did you want? Per writer, would you say 20, 25, or didn't
you know?
Didn't
I was very, you know, this is the first time I had done that job, so I was very like Morgan Murphy would not write a lot of jokes, but she had a super high percentage of getting jokes.
Yeah,
so I'd rather have her perfect a joke than someone just like
Right.
Spit out a bunch of stuff. But
and then ultimately Jimmy would pick them and then do
yeah,
them.
Yeah, we actually did it through to audiences before. There was like a, I know.
What do you mean?
A lot of work.
It was a lot of work. We would have like the crowd, the tours that would come through. They would go, hey, do you want to see a monologue?
Test crowd.
Yeah.
And Jimmy would do it?
And then with a piece of paper and just check the ones he liked. And like, let's rework this one a little bit. And then we put them on cards. And that was it.
Wow.
Pressure.
No, yeah, it was a lot of pressure.
That's great, though. But you've got an audience that can laugh at it.
It was very exciting. But to tell you the truth, I got kind of burnt out at it. I don't know what your experience was.
It's a burnout job.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I couldn't – I know you were talking about it earlier, if I may, again, circle back, that even though I was doing stand-up, I was so tired at the end of the day that I didn't even want to, like, be up late hanging out doing stuff.
No, I know what you mean.
Because I had to get up.
You intimately get to know news cycles, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so if you hit on a Bill Clinton, you might be writing Bill Clinton jokes for 6 months, 5 days a week, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever seen a political cycle dominate like the one that we're in right now, where it is just every night you're writing jokes about politics? I've never seen one this long.
I mean, I would assume during the Clinton impeachment.
There was – There were a lot. But I remember that would not dominate – politics would not dominate the whole monologue.
I think we're in a different place now. I really do. We're in a different place. Is like now the hosts, you know, the political leanings of the hosts.
Right.
That was something that wasn't even Letterman. I mean, he used to make a lot of Clinton jokes, and you were like, and then only later.
I never sensed with any of these guys there were political leanings. I sensed that these were the people getting in trouble, and we were making fun of those people wherever they were. Like, you know, there was never any like, hey, although there was.
What?
We used to make Ted Kennedy jokes a lot on Letterman. And then we had – I remember right outside my office, there were some interns there. And we had this intern who was the writer's intern.
Right.
And then one day she came up to me. She goes, hey, can I talk to you for a second? Close the door. And I'm like, yeah, sure. She goes, look, Ted Kennedy's been calling a lot. I said, what? She goes, he's a family friend. And now I'm like doing all the math very quickly. Like, did he get her on this show as an intern?
Right.
He's like, he goes, is there anything you can do to not write Ted Kennedy jokes?
He
feels like you've made too many jokes about him. Right? And
that's
I was
amazing.
So freaked out over that. And I said, I'm not in charge of anything on this show. I'm just a writer. But Chef wasn't there yet.
Okay.
But if you want to share this with Dave,
that's incredible.
But I always felt that this job you're talking about for Jimmy Fallon is we were going through the newspapers and looking for that dopey person who did something reluctantly kind of stepped in it, right?
Right,
and then we were going to go after them. It was never like, let's go after the Republicans. Let's go after that's a liberal leaning. That's a political leaning is what you're talking about.
I always thought it was like, to your point,
Bill Clinton is going to get it just as much as Trump would get it from Dave. Right?
No question. But I feel that like now it's a little different.
But isn't that because the people who really are stepping in it are all on one side at this point?
It reveals who the comedian is. It reveals what their political leanings are at this point.
It believes where the fodder for the jokes are. That's all. That's all it tells me.
I don't know. When I saw like –
it's like how are you going to go out and write jokes about – like you know, I don't know. Who am I going to think of right now? Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
What did she do this week? They go, can you believe? Because the setup for the joke is what's funny about it, right? And that's what you're always looking for.
Look, I mean obviously we're in some weird – I mean just the word presidential like doesn't even – presidential behavior is like it now has been widened to a degree where it's
but when what
to be like
this
Frank
guy
Bay.
Is doing and what these other people are doing, the laugh is in the setup. You go, hey, you know what he said this week? You're already halfway there.
You don't even have to write the joke.
So I always get a little. I always look at somebody kind of cocky when I go, "Well, so the political leanings. There's no political leaning there. This is just where the comedy fuel is right now, right?" And And that, you know, that can be anything. That really, like you said, it can be the Weird News or any of these other places that we go look. It's just that we've got this political cycle that's dominating right now, and all the insanity is happening there, and that's where the comedy lives.
No question.
I don't know. Anyway, fascinating. I could talk about comedy all day, Zuckerman.
And what bothers me is he doesn't get free parking. I'm still
Fetterman, Professor Fetterman.
At USC.
Yeah. It is surprising. Right. I was surprised at that.
Cheap. I think that's a $1 million endowment if Fetterman has to pay for parking.
It's $12. It's $12. Now I've learned.
Per class? Well, it's a huge deal to be teaching at this school.
Okay.
I
still think they should give him parking.
They absolutely should. But I mean, do you really not know this? Everybody where we live, we all want our kids to go to this school.
I had no idea. I thought it was.
But didn't Spielberg teach there too? Is it?
Yeah. Well, okay. First of all, you have got to see compared
Lucas
to
did.
The School of Dramatic Arts is just like these little classrooms with black boxes and chairs.
Correct.
It's like, yeah.
Yes.
You go to the School of Cinema Arts, it's like
deluxe.
No, it's literally you're like watching like the Coliseum or something. These buildings, these huge, there's the Spielberg building, there's the Lucas building. It is as ornate.
I think you're the future of that school, my friend.
I do not think
people are watching movies anymore. The cinematic arts don't exist.
Let's go to his building and tag it, the Fetterman building.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you, I want to come to the class. Could I sit on one?
100%.
I would love to.
Let's go.
100%. I would love to learn. I really do want to learn.
I know you do
stand up.
I know. I feel like you're being sincere.
I'm very sincere.
I want the history.
I just want to.
Or Frank Fay.
Frank Fay.
Frank Fay for sure is someone we need to open up.
Do you know who Toadie Fields is?
Yes,
Vaguely
I do.
Heard the name.
Yeah, see?
Didn't she have a leg removed?
Yeah, she did.
Right. Yeah.
She kept doing her act.
And she had diabetes?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
what
it was?
Well, she was overweight. That was her, like. I'm
so overweight, I had my leg cut off.
Jeez.
Okay, now it sounds terrible.
Now I'm going to bring out a fascist Irishman who everybody hates. I can see people leaving. You should all just get out of here. Frank Fay, ladies and gentlemen.
The great Frank Fay.
The man who created stand-up comedy.
But in a way, now that
he hates the Jews, he hates the blacks, he hates everybody.
But
he's on a 10th wife.
And there is your archetype for a successful
comedian.
Exactly.
In a way, it is sort of...
Miserable, hateful.
Miserable.
Well, we're all very happy you came on today and told us about Frank Fay. Because that I can tell right now, Zuckerman, you and I are going to go on a deep dive of Frank Fay for the next 2 weeks.
Frank Fay joke.
Yeah.
I would love to. I don't think there's any. I mean, he did several movies, and sometimes he's emceeing in the movies, but it's very short.
No biography?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, he was really reviled, and, you know.
He was also an actor, too.
Yeah. And he was a singer. He was like, I don't know. That's the guy that Bob Hope points to is the one who was like, oh, you can do this as opposed to being a song and dance man or, you know. But there's another guy, like Charlie Case and Tannen, that dude. So there was a lot at the time. And some people... Do you know, remember the comedian Rich Scheidner?
Rich Scheidner,
who's also a comedy nerd from way back, he even traces it further. He goes back to Mark Twain and a guy named Artemus Ward in the 1800s, but there's no footage of these
right.
guys. There's no way of knowing.
Here's one last
anecdote.
Okay.
So funny.
Milton Berle, who was Jewish... claimed to have hit Fay in the face with a stage brace because Fay, once seeing Berle on the side of the stage watching his act, called out, "Get that little Jew bastard out of the way."
I think that was his closer.
Shortly before his death, Fay was declared legally incompetent. he died at 69. He's buried at the Calvary Cemetery in Los Angeles. Where is that, Zuckerman? Do you have any idea?
Let's look it up. Let's go. Let's make a pilgrimage.
It's not where they show those movies on the weekend. It's CineSpa. No, that's Hollywood Forever.
Yes.
No.
Let's go there. Is the Jewish?
This is East L.A. He's buried in East L.A.
Is he?
Right where he wants
Boulevard.
To be.
We should.
Well. Wayne, it's been a lot of fun.
It has been
here, my friend.
Fun.
We've got to tell everybody to check out your podcast, which I believe is launching soon, History of Stand-Up.
Starts Tuesday.
Six.
What's today? Oh, I don't even. When does this?
I don't know. This should air very soon. We'll put it up there. Yeah, yeah, you guys got to check it out because Wayne is obviously funny, talented, and if you're a student at USC, take this class. Don't be afraid. Like
you
Spike.
Have to know, you have to go through a class to get to my class. You can't just take it. Without
go through all the classes.
Yeah, you got to go through level one.
And learn. This is it's an important skill set to learn. It's like the toast. Forget about Toastmasters. Take Wayne's class and learn how to communicate on stage. It'll be very useful and nice, even if you're not a stand-up. Zuckerman, what do you have to say for yourself?
I got nothing other than Frank Faye's on my mind for the rest of the day. And, I'm in love.
And
with
don't
Frank
tell,
Faye.
Don't do not tell Seinfeld that
that we got the blue
that
Porsche,
we've got the blue car. We, I'm not a part of it, but I would like to be a part of it. I'm Spike Ferriston. You can catch up with me on Instagram at Spike Ferriston. That's where I will respond to you. I love you all, and I will see you next week on Spike's Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
The Lakers are officially here on the official Lakers podcast on Podcast One Sportsnet. Join Emmy Award-winning sports reporter Susie Schuster and co-host Aaron Larsoul as they discuss the Lakers' news of the day and break down the upcoming season with some of the biggest guests around, including Shaq, Magic, and the new king of L.A., LeBron James. Check out the official Lakers podcast every week on Podcast One Sportsnet or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.